Welcome, travelers. I'm Josh.
I'm Glenn.
And I'm Lee Wanika. And this is Tabletop Journeys, where we will be your not-so-humble guides on the quest for RPG adventures.
Here at Tabletop Journeys, we are all devoted role players and storytellers at heart, and we absolutely love sharing our passion with you. On our show, we feature diverse tabletop RPG systems, demonstrating them through actual plays and breaking down the rules to provide you with tips, tools, and techniques to help you navigate them. We also love bringing the content creators behind these games into the studio to give you a peek behind the curtain with relevant and insightful interviews.
Let us help you get the most out of your story, no matter what game world or system you're playing. Because detailed settings, heroic characters, diverse NPCs, and a focus on story over rules can make any campaign legendary. Everybody, I know normally you would be expecting to go ahead and hear Star Trek Reservations today, but with some news that has come out from Modiphius, we decided to go ahead and take one of our normal Tuesday slots and talk about STA as a game and some exciting stuff that's happening here. I am, as always, joined by my erstwhile co-hosts, Mr. Lee Wanika Miller, Mr. Glenn Myers. Gentlemen, how the hell are you? What's going on?
Hey.
So we're getting together tonight to go ahead and talk about, again, the announcement that Modiphius put out about a week ago from the point that we're recording it about Star Trek Adventures 2nd Edition. They're going to be doing a revision of the rule set to go ahead and, you know, let's spade a spade. And all the love in the world for friends of the show, Jim Johnson and Mike Dismuke and everybody over there, Al Spader, everybody over at the STA shop. Thank you. Thank you for looking at this rule set and offering a revision, because we talked about it on our show when we talked about the core rules. And Glenn, I know we'll let you go first here, because I know you in particular dove into the core rules a lot. That book needs some reorganization. So thank you for committing to doing so. Why don't you take it from there, Glenn?
Sure. So I think that this is great news. I'm excited for it because I'm hoping to one day run STA, and I still don't feel confident in it. I have been a player, obviously, in many sessions, and I very much enjoy the game, and I love the system. But aside from being slightly intimidated by the technobabble, though I know there are cheat sheets for that, I was horribly intimidated by the organization of the game's rules when I was first exposed to it. Now, mind you, I have since learned where to go to, from, thank you, Lee Wanika, to find much better summaries of the rules and ways to interpret them through other books. But the core book in particular is, it's the first thing that they wrote when they were still figuring out what they were doing 8 years ago. And it needs some reorganization. When we talked about it previously, I was as kind as I possibly could be, but it is a thick read that's very confusing. It's got huge depth of lore, which is great, but it's mixed throughout the mechanics, so you can't use it as a reference book because there's no easy way to flip through it. It seriously needed a revamp. Maybe they should have called this a version 1.5 instead of going to a full-on version 2, because they're just doing a revamp and a reorganization of the existing rules with some changes, as opposed to a complete and total upending of it all. But it doesn't need that. The game sings the way it is. It just needs what they're talking about doing, which I'm all in for and I'm excited about. Making the rules more organized and easier to follow and read, taking out some of the things that aren't as well used because they didn't test as well with fans, etc., and bringing in some of, and more of, the new rules they've been inventing as they go, as they come out with all of the new books that they've been putting out. And each one of those books, if you look at them chronologically, has gotten significantly better and more organized as they went. Like, they've been doing the thing and they've been learning the lessons of how to put this game together. And now it's time to give us a revamp of the start to make the entry into this game easier for new players and new storytellers.
Yeah. Here. Totally, very well said. And this is why I knew you were the guy for the job. It was like, everything that you said there, totally agree with. I think that the changes that we saw in the player's guide and the game master's guide were a big step forward. And you're right. They need to, all the lessons that they have learned over those 7 or 8 years since second edition will come out, they need to go ahead and take all those lessons. They need to put them together, organize it better, and make the game more accessible. Yeah.
Absolutely. I've been playing as a GM for over a year and several months now, and planning that campaign for about 6 months before that. And there's a reason why, for every person that I was trying to get into this game and bring to the table and start playing this game, I said these words: starter box, player's guide, GM's guide. That's what you needed to start with. That was, at the time, the core rules. I realized shortly after that the Klingon book was absolutely perfect. Some of the rules clarification that are in the Klingon book are phenomenal. In fact, when I rock into a convention and I'm running the game, the GM screen I use is the Klingon GM screen, because it is even organized better than the original GM screen and has things a little better ready. The other thing I've done when I've gone to conventions, because it is so difficult to flip through that core book or whatnot, is I just put together packets. Every pre-gen character sheet comes with their particular roles, common actions, and common tasks sheet. I put together my own GM screen that just had those sheets. When we did a Catacon, I put together two of those, one for Josh for when he ran, one for me. And then we created little packets of the basic rules and all, as well as those sheets, so they could be handed around the table, because that book is difficult. It's not easy to just earmark a page or, say, turn to the table of contents to find a thing. I absolutely look forward to a second edition that's going to keep that in mind. I look at books like Utopia Planitia, which is perfection for as a resource. I look at books like the Klingon Core Rule book. I look forward to getting the new Klingon Tactical Overlay in my hands, because I know how that's going to be put together. Had a couple good conversations with Al about it, and I'm really anxious and interested to see how the combat engine is streamlined and be as for ship combat to be able to utilize that in the game. Look, I'm going to call out the dirty little secret of Tabletop Journeys here. Forgive me, team, if I do this without us having discussed it. We didn't do a major ship conflict in Star Trek Preservation Season 1 for a reason. It was hard. It's hard.
That's it. Hard.
H-A-R-D.
H-A-R-D. Hard. Right? You know, we left it on the brink at the end of episode 10 and wrapped it up in season 2. I had to go out and really feel I knew how to did it. Thankfully, as a GM, a lot of my stress was relieved, because the amazing players I have handled things in a way that limited the way that combat took place. It was over and done. It didn't get too involved. But I, too, want to have a good, really cool starship battle. But those rules are intimidating. It can become a slog. Here we are putting on a show for radio, effectively. We can't have it be a slog. Slogs are not fun. If as gamers, we know slogs are not fun when we're sitting at the table. As GMs, we don't like putting our players through slogs either. Audiences don't listen to slogs on podcasts. They just don't. I know I don't.
Yeah.
I love great scenes, but if I sense there's a slog going on, I'm going to fast forward till I think that slog's about over. Yeah. Because that's tough. And the fact that there's on the horizon a much better way to do that fills me with so much joy. So much joy. I'm excited. Yeah.
When there was a ship combat in season 1, but you didn't run it. I had to run it. It was when the Delamis Christian ran across the Zindi colony ship, and the little raider that was attacking the colony ship. There's a brief combat in there, but even that combat, which was designed to be brief and fleeting, and basically the other ship was going to run away, even that was arduous. It took a lot of editing to make that sound as good as it came out in the episode. And we look at other things that we've done in just the way that we run things. Like, I remember Joe Harney, the voice of Captain Tobor, who commented on there was an entire episode that was nothing but an extended challenge. Mm-hmm. But the episode still sang because of the personalities at the table and everything like that. And we don't want to waste that. We don't want to waste that very valuable resource that we've got, which is our player base, and putting them through something that we're not comfortable running, for one. but is really difficult. So really hoping that, I feel like we've got it under our belts now, but I really think that there are some things that could be done on that front.
And as a person who goes to, who has been made a point, I made the point at the end of last year, I'm going to start going to more conventions. I have already, by the time this episode airs, I will have already been to more conventions this year than I attended last year. That's how fast I'm moving on this, right? And with more to come, right? Or pretty close. I think I'm equal. And by the time this airs, I will be equal to the total number of conventions that I went to all of last year. And by April, I'll have gotten one more, and I'll probably have more by June. So I'm going to as many conventions as I can possibly manage. And I'm going to run games at them. And it has not been lost on me that at the conventions I've been at thus far, I'm the only person running a STA. If we're going to get more people playing this game, there's going to have to be more than one GM at New England area gaming conventions running STA. I ran three sessions at TotalCon 38. So only 15 people had the opportunity at that game to play. I ran all three as learn to play games. Happy to teach people to play this game because it's so amazing.
I think Al ran STA also, didn't he?
No, he actually played at my table, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, by the time he found out about the con, it was too late to be able to put in table submissions. He would have ran. So it is one of those situations where I am very cognizant that we need more GMs running this game. It needs to be more than just one or two people in all of Connecticut. And I know there's more people playing in Connecticut, but at conventions running the game. Sure. Conventions are a great opportunity for people to try a thing, see that it's fun, and then go from there. But we got to have more people doing it. That's not going to happen if the rules are not more accessible. I absolutely look forward to second edition because I know that by making what's a fun game more accessible, it's going to get more people playing. It's Star Trek. Geeks love Star Trek. Done. All we got to do is make the game a little easier for GMs to run it for.
Oh, you got to call me a geek, bro.
Because I love you, and geeks are all geeks. People.
Yeah, like that's
No, I definitely am, and wear that flag with pride.
Yeah. So that's the perfect segue, Lewinika, to what I think is like chapter two here, and that is, I'll turn to you. What has been announced for what's going to be in the rewrite of the second edition book, and what are some of the highlights that are going to be in there?
I could go point by point, but what I really will do is point folks to, and the links will be in the show notes, the Modifius webpage. That's where they're going to say most of this, but I'll give you the broad strokes of this. The idea is, as we've already talked about, reorganization, but there's a couple really big things that they hit on here. The second edition of this game is going to allow players and tables to join Starfleet, the Klingon Empire, the Romulan Star Empire, and countless other civilizations, whether they be civilians, whether they be other organizations, think Fenris Rangers, think other things like that. So it will not be a Federation-only game with hopefully supplements down the road for other things. So you can play a Ferengi or whatever by spreading that out and putting in all the new life path things to make that happen in one core book. It will not be a situation like we have in so many other tabletop games of, well, it's not in the core book, so I'm not really playing with that. Or I don't have that book, so I'm not really sure. It's going to be in the core rules. So awesome that those things are going to be there. That means we're going to be able to do a lot more with the game. Basically, the book's going to embrace Idic in a way that it had tried to and got mostly there, but now it's going to be able to get there. I found it interesting that on many of the pages, there's always, I'd say at least once a week, somebody saying, oh, when are we ever going to get a Romulan source book? When are we ever going to get a such and such source book? But here's the deal. The core rules will have that. You're never going to get that Romulan source book, but the ability to play a Romulan character or play a game on Romulus, or perhaps you're going to play Freedom Fighters on Remus, is going to be in the core game now. So it's not that it has to be an extra supplement. They're going to give you those characters. They're going to give you the ability to play your characters from there, and it'll be up to you, your storyteller, your game, your table, and how you set up your timeline and the canon in your game, how that expresses itself. And that's pretty awesome.
That is definitely something that you see on the Facebook forums in particular. And Jim has come out and been very honest about that. Now, probably not going to get a Romulan source book. That's just most likely not going to happen. It seems like with the new strategic direction, they are instead making the ability to do that sort of thing more wide open and more intuitive to folks reading the book, as opposed to a book which is dedicated just to Romulan plots, Romulan causes, Romulan characters, Romulan settings, right? Yep. It's making the book more accessible and giving information so that storytellers can go ahead and take all that information and say, I have what I need now to go do this.
Yeah. Sean Merwin and Teosa frequently on their podcast, Mastering Dungeons, talk about those types of issues. And they're talking about it from the Wizards of the Coast perspective. Why don't they do this kind of book? Why don't they do more adventures for this setting or that setting? And I can't tell you how many times during their question and answer session they've said, because the problem with the way Wizards of the Coast and D&D has built itself is some books are for players, some books are for GMs. There are more players than GMs, so therefore, if you build something that's only for a GM, you get less sales. That's why you get the power creep of anytime you need more GM stuff or more setting stuff, they have to toss in this slew of extra player stuff for other people to be able to buy it. And then because of page count issues, they then have to short shift one or the other or both. So you get a diluted product that's not that good. In here, at least outsider looking in, what I'm seeing is a dedicated effort to not do that. But they also recognize a source book is more likely to be a GM than a player. So that's why they do their GM stuff largely in these digital packets, the mission briefs, the modules. Those tend to be all PDFs. They're not often printed, or you might get one or two of them or a mission brief packet as part of something else, but that's it. And everything else tends to be much more heavily player focused with rules for how the GM should adjudicate or add that to their campaigns. That's a good decision.
Yeah.
Financially, business-wise, that's a great decision, right? You got to put the things there. Your operations books, whether your command division, your whatever division, those are very player-focused, but there's rules for the GMs in it also. Because this game allows players to build their ships, Utopia Planitia, which is a source book, which in any other game would probably be GM only, is an excellent thing for players because guess what? Now they see all the toys that they get to play with, right? Yeah. So there's a different way it's happening here. And I really caution anybody who listens to negativity about second edition STA to really think about how different this company is than other companies and how they approach the game and the sales. At the end of the day, business is a business. They do have to make enough profit to keep the lights on. But this is a family business. It's not a corporation. So there's that. And two, it is also a situation.
Wait a minute.
Yep.
How do you mean it's not? It is definitely a corporation.
Correct. But it is not a big major like Hasbro corporation. It's a family business. It's not. They don't have shareholders.
Oh, interesting.
It's a family run organization. They are probably the English equivalent of an LLC. I assume that much. I don't know the legal definitions, but it's a family run business and they're not government supported like Free League. So they don't get government subsidies to do what they do.
Sure.
There are some things that they will have to consistently do, but again, this is the company that is send us a picture of your receipt and your book and you got your PDF. Doesn't matter where you go. We'll support your locals just like you will, or you can get it from us if you got to get it in a hurry. Done. These are the people that had a fantastic Humble Bundle deal a couple years ago. These are the same folks who have, every time they put out a book, there's a wonderful quick start guide. There's a number of very low cost options that are available for folks. Even though they have special dice for their game, you can use any dice and anybody who plays the game will tell you how to do it. Shoot, you can tune into our show and learn how to do that. So I think it is definitely something where I hope people really look at who this company actually is and the actions they have actually taken with this game and this IP over the last 7 to 8 years and view them through the lens of what we've actually seen versus what we usually see from other companies.
Yeah. And just to throw on some other things, one point that you talked about was how the cross between GM books and player books and why players would want to pick up this book. Let's not forget, too, that some of the stuff that they've said is going to be in here that is specifically player-centric. More values, more talents, more information on department usage and what your role within a given department is, all that sort of stuff. More so there's roles. Going to be a ton of roles, a ton of player content in here. I think if Jim and Michael have anything to go ahead and say about it at all, I'm sure that they are going to be have their finger on that pulse pretty strongly. Yeah, I think anything that you see on the Continuing Conversations blog and anything that's talked about on that show, I would be willing to bet that you will see that sort of stuff in there, which I'm super duper excited about, because I think that's an area where we have been expanding the game as we've played it, and leaving it up to our own imagination about how to go ahead and increase these talents and how to go ahead. Part of the character generation process is very much like shepherding through, like letting people come up with their own ideas in the infinite expanse that is the world of talents, right? But giving some more guidance in that direction is only going to make the book stronger and the book more usable. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally agree. And I got to say, I didn't want to interrupt Lee when Nika was going on, but one of the things I was most excited about was to hear about the expanded species and societies that are going to be added to the core book as playable options to be able to give you more directions that you can go. That sounded really cool to me. I love the idea of being able to develop the Fenris Rangers or any of the other organizations within the Star Trek universe at the table. That's fantastic.
If I will have to find a game that's going to let me play a character who is a follower of Absolute Candor from the former Romulan Empire, like that. Really, there's a whole lot of things that I absolutely love about the card series, and there's a couple things that I have some struggles with. I'm not one of the people that like took those issues and said it was bad. It just, some things were swings and misses for me, whereas other things were hot. But I gotta tell you, season one, the whole Romulan bit and what was going on with that and that society that was built there and the idea of Absolute Candor, oh my goodness, was that great. Absolute worst thing about season two was the fact they got rid of my favorite new character from season one. That was actually my challenge with season two. It's I wanted more of him and he was written off.
Yeah. Yep. I've been thinking a lot about what all this increased information is going to do in the way that I view STA. With the first adventure that I wrote that I played at a Catacon there when I was running STA, that Dark Frontiers adventure, right? Yeah. Very much like a supernatural X-Files type Eldritch horror mystery. I've been thinking about a series of adventures that kind of fit within that mold where it's like Scooby-Doo in space, right? It's the ship that you're on is the magic machine, and it's you're solving mysteries with like weird creatures and weird supernatural stuff going on. I'm really the increase in talents and everything like that, and it's giving me like, oh, now I'm really going to be able to go ahead and make that kind of like a mystery centric party. Again, we're not criticizing STA here at all, but if we're going to go ahead and I think that there's a pigeonhole that kind of all characters fall into. It's that Starfleet exceptionalism kind of pigeonhole. And if you try to do something outside, if you try to color outside the lines a little bit on that, it gets tough. You got to really have really good creative characters to be able to go ahead and do it. Leaning into the IDIC concept and but also giving players and storytellers a little bit of guidance on how to go through infinite options. So
absolutely. And I'm hearing rumors that there's going to be, and I don't recall as we're recording this, if it was from a source in the know, and it certainly wasn't worded as fact, but I am hearing rumors/leanings that there's a good possibility that we could also see some streamlining to the advancement system, the milestone system, so that's a little more clear, a little more direction. Because while Jim Johnson has very plainly said Star Trek is not like other games, it's not a level up kind of game, and that's accurate and reasonable, I think there are a lot of players that do feel the pseudo military structure of Starfleet does belie, or at the very least is at times cross purposes with that concept. So while it's not a level up game, people do want over time some kind of marker of transition or improvement.
Yeah, outside of rank. Like you can give them different rank, and that gives them different things.
I've dug into two different mission brief packs at conventions, set it in the Tabletop Journeys universe. I'm going to start running that at Aslan Station. There's the Station Missions briefs by Tony Pye, and then there's the Trade Missions packet by Michael Desmuke. So I'll be running all 20 of those at conventions.
The other thing that I wanted to jump on a little bit here, and you alluded to it a little bit when you were talking about it, and our smaller maybe act three of this particular episode is talking about how the second edition announcement has been received. I want to just briefly touch on this a little bit. I don't want to belabor it. I think that there has been a lot of really positive things said about it. If you read like the Reddit threads and everything like that, very positive. I do think that there were a lot of people that were surprised by this decision and that they were worried about what a second edition is going to mean after they have invested in all the first edition books and everything like that. To those folks, I will just say calm, slow. As veterans of the Wizards of the Coast TSR wars of the early 90s, let us remember that, yeah, we have been there. I have that entire case where there is full of books that are for a different edition of D&D that I need to go ahead and that I pull from all the time for inspiration and everything like that. I like that they have said that the rules are going to be basically backwards compatible is the wrong term because they're not really changing the engine. They're adding some pistons to it. It's not really a change to the engine.
It's getting a tune-up.
Yeah, exactly. Everything that you've got is going to continue to go ahead and work. It's just going to be better. I would just say let us trust the folks that have shepherded this game in particular over the last few years to go ahead and see it move forward in the appropriate way. And yeah. And I'm looking forward to it.
And that's why you felt like you had to make the statement, we're not trying to criticize STA. Because
we're not.
But it did feel that way during the conversation because we were excited and talking about all of the things about this game that we love that we feel can be improved.
Yeah.
Part of the reason we're talking about that is because of the way the community responded. A lot of people were upset, concerned, etc. And we're really just trying to say, hey, this is a good thing.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with saying we're going to take this, revamp it, spin it around a little bit, and turn it into a better game for you. It's been in print for 7 years. It's not like this is a money grab 2 years later. They've taken their time, they've learned their lessons, and they're trying to make a better game for us. And I think that's a wonderful thing.
I would say to folks who worry about this, or if you're brand new to the game, if you just said, hey, I saw this game at a convention I went to, or I saw some people talking about it on this random Reddit thread, or I saw Todd Stashwick with a box set on IMDb. What I would say to you is if you go to any of the pages and people that are seem a little bothered or upset, I would say this, don't worry about it. One, this is a change for you, the new player, that the rest of us who've been playing for a while also get the benefit of.
Yep.
And for those of us who've been playing for a while, I would say, remember 6 months ago when there's something you didn't understand and you wished it made more sense.
Yep.
Remember a year before that when you were probably first getting started playing, or 3 years or 4 years when you were first getting started playing, and it took you forever to figure out how to get that thing going.
Yep.
But you did. Remember that one thing that you never understood and you and your table just homebrewed around it because you just didn't have the energy to work through it. Remember all of you who bought Captain's Log as a solo game because you can't find a table and loved the speed and the look and the feel of that game. And just remember, those are all the things that are being encapsulated in second edition.
Yeah.
That's why this is happening. It's not the money. It's not the extension of the product. It's for all of those previously stated reasons. They're putting this together to make it better. I'm looking at character sheets that I absolutely love and have been using for a year and a half now. And I'm also looking at the Captain's Log character sheets for either characters or for ships that don't have talents on them necessarily at all. And I'm like, that's a smoother sheet. And as a GM who needs a card at a table at a con, I'm looking at printing out a lot of my sheets on Captain's Log cards because it's easier for me to run at the convention because it's faster. It's one clean sheet. It's small. And I can use that much easier at the table as a GM. If they can build that kind of ease of use into second edition for all these same things, you've just halved my prep time. And you've made me able to do what I want to do at the table, which is engage in a fantastic narrative with great players who are all in. I can be better able to support and provide an all-in experience if it's easier for me to handle and navigate.
All right, so one more chapter to go here in our episode tonight. This is our wish list episode. This is our wish list chapter, right? What are the things that we hope are going to be covered in the second edition book? And I think that we go ahead, I think we do this one round robin. So we can just keep going around until we're out, but each of us gets one. You can talk about it a little bit, Lewanika, but you got to come up with one. Your turn will come up again. So you can save your second one for the next, but come up with one. Glenn, why don't we start with you?
Okay. So I'm going to be honest. If I were to, based on my experience with Star Trek so far, pick one thing that I would like to be revamped, aside from the
or included, or something
for me to be able to process it better, it would probably be streamlining extended tasks and challenges, because sometimes they can be very cool, but usually not just sometimes, if they are set up with the right subject matter and the right stakes, they are very cool, but they can be a very long, crunchy session of die rolling more than role-playing sometimes. So if they can find a way to streamline those and bring a little bit more, I don't know exactly what to call it, a little bit more
juice.
Juice isn't bad, but a little bit more playability to it. Besides, okay, I'm going to roll my dice to see how many successes I get towards progress on this track. And I know part of that's on us as gamers too, to create something good narrative through it. But if we could streamline those a little bit so that it would be easier to tell stories with them, instead of just having to work to make an episode that's an extended task be enjoyable, that would be fantastic.
Yep. I like it. All right, Lee, when you can go ahead.
I'm going to say, I would like the book to have better options and or direction for selecting possible values. And I'm going to lean into the probability matrices that are found in Captain's Log and the plethora of probability matrices that Michael Desmuc has put out on the Continuing Missions fan site. If you go to that site, hopefully the links will also be here, and use the search feature to look for Matrix, you'll see all of them. So if you're playing a security officer, there's 20 or 30 different options there that are basically values. So if you're brand new to this game and you're struggling with how to pick a value, look at your role, go to the Matrix for that role, and there'll be a bunch of options. And if any of those 30 don't sing for you, because remember, you only need a total of 4, and they don't all come from your role anyway, if any of those 30 don't sing for you, that'll probably inspire you and give you a really strong idea of what values are. Similarly, there's ones by role, there's one by some by situation. So if you're just playing a shady character, there's one for that. If you're playing an engineer or whatever, there's one for that. There are so many of them. And not only is that good for players to see all of those, but as a storyteller, what I realized after the fact, not when we first started this game, but a year plus in, that those matrices are pretty much the same thing as the collaborative world building tables that Tabletop Journeys put out at the start of our content creation career here. Yeah. So like we started a lot of what we do with those. We didn't call them matrices, but that's exactly what they were. Yep. Story prompts to get the game going. If they can get just at least one for each role so that people have an idea of what that is, that will take a lot of that confusion as to what do you mean by a value. The mechanics are very good about describing what to do with it, but I think it currently struggles with letting us understand what it is. It tells us what it is. I found it hard to understand what it was until I saw it in play. And it would have been much easier if I had just had those probability matrices to begin with.
So I'm going to go on a similar bent that you did, Lewanika, but not exactly the same. I think that from a storyteller, what would be super helpful is better explanation and examples of complications. I recognize that complications can be virtually infinite and can be whatever you want them to be. We need to go ahead and admit that's the shape of the game. And saying in the book that complication can be anything that you want it to be, have at it. While true, not super useful. So I would love to go ahead and see examples of complications. Examples in general will help the book, and I think that, and that kind of encompasses like all three things that we're that we were talking about here. Is don't just tell me what the rule is, but show me how the rule is used, so then I can try to understand it.
Yep.
Probability matrices for complications, I think, would be very
helpful. Oh my god! Yeah, that'd well. Be exactly. Yeah, in the storyteller's guide, the complications is half of one column of one page. That's it. So we need, for something that is such a huge part of the game. I would not have known how big complications were until I started running it, and then all of a sudden, it's, oh yeah, complications are really my best tool as a storyteller to go ahead and create drama and create scenarios that my players need to go ahead and work their way out of. Complications are where it's at. So put a little bit more meat on that bone, please. Yeah, and thank you.
Absolutely. To put a fine point on that, we had a lot of questions at a certain point in our first season, or towards the end of our first season, where there were questions about how easy some things felt. Yeah. And as storytellers, we were witnessing that ourselves, Jess. You and I privately talked about that. And then we got some really good information and instruction and discussions with some other folks, Al being chief among them, but also a few other folks that I spoke with and that have talked to us about it. The answer was always, are you using your traits? How are you structuring your complications?
Yeah.
And are you increasing your complication range? So it all focuses around that complication mechanic and its frequency in play. And what I have noticed since I have started to bring some of that into that, increased complication range has decreased sometimes the amount of dice purchased, because even though you can purchase more dice for success, you are increasing your probability of having a complication. So the volume of, we've blown out our momentum pool. Meanwhile, you, Mr. GM, are sitting on limited threat, has become much more imbalanced as the game goes on. I've noticed that just in the set, in the three sessions I ran in the conventions and in the couple sessions I've run for our actual play, that better understanding of that mechanic is making the game more challenging from a fun, in a fun way.
Yep. All right. Anybody else have anything else that they want to add onto our wish list for Mr. Johnson while we're at it?
Streamline ship combat. I think my guess is that's already in place, because I'll know more once I get hold of the tactical rules from the Klingon book. Thank you, Al.
I know Glenn had mentioned that earlier, that the ship combat, you talked about it, and then Luanika, we echoed that about how, so, that's why we didn't run any.
I think we've said that. Other than that, I think, and I think our love of more polities, more player character options, just more. I think it's just going to open the game up and give us
more examples of how the rules apply and the different aspects that you can apply to a situation for traits. And yes, absolutely more.
Yep. In fact, I will make those, like you were talking earlier about making bold statements that you hadn't cleared with the other two. I will go forward and make the statement that if any of the scenarios in Star Trek Preservations are felt like they adequately showcase a particular mechanic or a stat or anything like that, Modifius, Jim, this is your permission right now to go ahead and use them. Please just let us know. So we're happy to go ahead and help. Call your boys, TTJ.
And I feel like I need to go out on a limb and say something crazy that you two aren't prepared. I hope they add more lightsabers.
Okay, I will throw one out here, and this is for love of
art. Joke. Those are in Star Wars, not Star Trek.
I'll say, calm down on the full spread proton torpedoes, because I saw that just light up a ship. I'm like, oh my.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't prepared for how bad a beatdown a full spread of photon torpedoes from a Saber class ship can be. I did not anticipate the posterior whooping that got thrown down. There weren't no amount of threat that was going to make that better.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's underscores the point that I was talking about earlier too, about how, like, you know, the name of the game is Star Trek. The characters are all Starfleet exceptionalists, right?
Yeah.
So they are very good at what they do. They are the strongest force. Making them fear is difficult. So I honestly will be, when I ran Dark Frontiers at a Catacon, it was hard to go ahead and make the characters scared. So I worked more on making the players freak out. That's you play with the dynamic of the table a little bit there to go ahead and see if you can make them make unforced errors, kind of things.
Yeah. Right.
All right, gentlemen. So next week, like we said, episode 3 of Star Trek Preservations begins. Episode 3 is called On the Far Side of the Sea. It is very much an interesting thing happened at the Forum. What's the name of the show? A very interesting thing happened on the way to the Forum, or whatever the Broadway musical is. Preservations episode 2 ends with the ship jumping to warp to go to a location. Episode 4 will happen at that location. Episode 3 is about the journey and the friends that you meet along the way. It'll be a good time.
There's going to be friends. I like friends.
There will be friends. This is the first episode that I'm going to get to run in season 2. So I'm very excited to be doing that once again. Thank you all for listening. Appreciate the time as always. Go Modifius. Cannot wait for second edition.
Stick with us here, TTJ. We're going to keep you posted on the things that we know as we know them through our various pages, but mostly through our community forum itself. Come see us at conventions. We're likely to be running. We'd love to see you. Love to have you at our tables. And shout out to all the folks that have been at TTJ tables in the last couple months. Really appreciate your time.
We'll talk to you again next week. Until then, have a great night.
IDIC, y'all.
Thank you for joining us. This has been Tabletop Journeys. We would love to hear your feedback on our show today. Join us at www.ttjourneys.com, where you can subscribe to the blog to leave comments and see all the content that we publish beyond the podcast.
You can also stay in touch by subscribing to our Twitter, Tumblr, or Instagram at TT Journeys, joining our Facebook group, Tabletop Journeys, or by sending an email directly to podcast@ttjourneys.com. Our full episodes come out every week on Friday, and every Tuesday features actual play and gameplay showcase episodes. Looking for early access? You can support the show and get episodes before everyone else at www.patreon.com/TTJourneys. Check it out today and see all the awesome benefits we bring to our supporters.
Lastly, if you're listening to us on Stitcher, iTunes, Podchaser, Spotify, or Audible, you would really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe to the podcast on that platform. Thank you for listening and for being a part of our growing community. And we bid you fair tides, friends, for legends await.